All right, now let's go ahead and call the meeting to order.
Murphy.
Here.
Bubba.
Here.
Morris.
Here.
Perry.
Here.
King.
Here.
Stuber.
Here.
Treelock.
All right, everyone stand, and Nate's going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Awesome. Try to get him to do the prayer, too.
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we invite you to remain standing for our invocation. Father, we come to you tonight, and we ask you for your wisdom as we go through the issues facing Tolono at this time. Father, we thank you for wisdom. We thank you for clarity of mind and clarity of speech. And Father, we thank you for allowing our ears to hear their hearts. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
All right. For my keys to come off of my belt. Really?
This is nice.
Get it off. It's nice. Love
you too. Get that pencil on.
Good ad.
All right. Can we have the
yes.
Who signed up down there?
Sorry.
All right, Miss Henry. Number one on the list.
Small crew is becoming very small. But anyway, why I'm here is we have heard that for some reason or other, the village maintenance people are not going to be supporting us physically getting ready for the fun day, which is next Friday and Saturday, 10 days from days, as they have in the past. One thing we heard, they are not going to spread mosquito beetle in the park. They are not going to help us, I mean, say not to mention it, but get some of the things we need to get out to be, have everything ready for our celebration, for the race and stuff like that. We have heard that you have been able to get a light, or some kind of light thing that lets the people
science.
Out. Yes. That lets electronic, that lets people know that there are races going on and stuff like that, which we appreciate. But in the whole scheme of things, the race is a very small part of Tomorrow Fun Day. The biggest majority of the people come to the park. They go to the parade on in the east side park. They go to the race, but they're at the park, and that's where the thousands of people are. And that's where we need the most help. Because since there's only 7 or 8, or sometimes 9 now, because we have 2 people that are helping us. We cannot physically do everything that needs to be done in the park to be ready for almost a 2-day event. We start, and I know it doesn't matter, but it does. We start very early morning of Friday morning, getting ready for Saturday, for Friday night. Then we they're all day Saturday, starting with the sunrise service. And then we don't leave till midnight or 1 o'clock the next morning. Then we come back and clean up because we want to leave it just like we found it, if not better. This is the biggest event that draws people to Tolono, bigger than the Fleischer. We don't do it for any satisfaction other than for the community. We get paid nothing. We're all volunteers. We occasionally get a pork chop sandwich if we don't feel guilty for having it for free. But we do this all because we want to have a memory for my grandbabies, Bob's grandbabies, everybody's grandbabies, that when they grew up in Toronto, they had this event that came every year that they could come to, because people come from all over. And we're non-for-profit, so all of our money, except for what you guys donate us, we are out there earning. And right now we're trying to get a go-kart raffle ticket, so that's our biggest money maker. Like I said, we appreciate all of your help, we appreciate your community support. We just want to make sure that we can count on you to help us win this year, because we can't do it by ourselves. So, anything else to say about it?
Right.
Thank you for your time.
Well, I haven't heard those rumors. Matt's been sent a list of things that need to be done. We approved buying the citronella stuff for the park already.
Okay.
That's already been approved. And he's been instructed to at least get the weed killer out this week, or not, well, this week and next week, and make sure everything's trimmed up.
I saw Freedom Yard.
Actually, one of the kids in town that has a landscaping business must have picked up that contract, because he did all of that. So
he just did it for free.
Did he do it for free? That was really nice of him. Yeah, Dylan Stacy did it.
But our biggest thing is Main 45 and Holden Street, all that is where people from out of town come in. That's where we need to.
And they'll get it. They've been given the instructions what they're going to do. So, and we'll do what we did last year. They'll get their stuff out.
Maybe a little bit more.
You're always pushing.
Well, it's always just a little bit better.
You got to try.
You got to try.
The worst you can say is no.
I'll give you Woody for the day. How about that?
Well, we appreciate it. We just wanted to make sure that we were hearing from you.
You'll get our help.
Okay.
You know I'm on the committee, and you have my phone number, and you have my email.
You do know you're on the committee.
Well, I show up once in a while, like twice a year. So, all right, good.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
You'll see.
All right, Mr. and Mrs. Ortman, do you want to talk together or separately?
Well, I'm
going to
see what he says.
Okay, I love
questions
it.
On that.
I'm Dave Ortman. I had a little awakening last Friday. I came home and WCIA was parked in my yard.
Welcome to the club.
I got an ordinance that I had never heard of about fencing around your pool. Actually, I heard of it because in 1998, I was part of the ordinances and zoning board, and we kind of wrote this and then kind of shelved it, but that was 98. Anyway, I went up to the office, and the young lady gave me a copy of it, and I got a bunch of questions about it.
Okay.
All right, first, we had never seen it. We still don't see it on your website or nothing, but there's no dates on this, when it took effect. There was a $200 fine when that takes effect. So those are a couple items we'd like to know.
Didn't I get the front page? I say the front
what
page
does yours
has
look
the.
Like?
We got page 2 and 3. That was.
Yeah,
the
we didn't get
you didn't
get
the front page. That's
front
why
page.
He didn't. It's got all the information that's missing.
All right. The next question is, how do you find out about this if WCIA doesn't show up at your house?
Well,
it's not on your website.
Well, we're having some website issues right now. But like we talked about before, doing codification. So eventually all of our ordinances will be on there and searchable if we ever get through codification. but on this one, if you were in violation, that's when you got the letter. You had a letter and the ordinance, and you had 30 days to come in compliance. You weren't on the list.
No, we weren't on the list.
Weren't on the list. So your pool got overlooked.
My question to that is, why weren't all residents notified? What if you're thinking about getting a pool?
How much did it cost us enough? That thing. Like,
yeah,
well,
June 5th.
Well, she's sending out a notification to the entire village on something else, and it's cost a fortune. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of dollars to send a letter out to everyone in town.
A postcard from, I've worked with the village, like I said, I've been on, a postcard was free. It used to be.
No.
It's not anymore.
No.
You have to pay postage on?
Oh, yeah, we pay postage on everything.
Yeah, thanks to the state of Illinois, you got enough, because we
used
to
never
have to pay postage.
But
okay.
Anyway, somehow we got to get this out, because first it went out June 5th. Everybody's pool was filled by June 5th.
Mm-hmm.
So you've already spent $300 to $500 to fill. So we need to think about that. Second thing is, You know, so we were notified, so we're not in violation. I'm not sure I understand the rules. I mean, children die from drowning in 2-foot pools, not 5-foot pools.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get in our pool. So why would you not protect, and this is what we had arguments in the 90s about. We were taking on the responsibility of saying what was safe and what wasn't safe. Well, if a kid can climb a 4-foot fence, he can climb your 4-foot pool.
Yeah.
So you're not stopping anybody that wants to do this, but the problem we had was, since you took your pool down every year, but you know, 2-foot pools are by far more dangerous from the up on it. The other questions are, so we didn't get a notice, so we don't have to come do anything. But if we ever get a notice, you must realize that in order to, so you gotta get a permit for the fence.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you gotta get a drawing for the fence, you gotta get a price, you gotta get a contractor, you gotta submit it, you gotta get a permit. That is not gonna happen in 30 days. There ain't no way ever possible. I do a lot of construction. You will get a fence done. There are other options, you know, build a deck around it. That takes even longer. But people may wanna do that. You can also build the little fence and put it on the side of the pool, apparently, according to...
Yeah, 2 foot above the...
2 foot above
the wall.
Those take about 30 to 45 days to even get here. We've already checked on those. Then there's another thing. There's a cover for a pool. Why wouldn't a cover be adequate for certain people if the children can't get in the pool? But that's not listed. So... I guess basically what I'm trying to figure out is, am I going to get a $200 fine? Apparently not, since I wasn't notified. What do people that are asking me, since I talked to WCIA and I'm getting a lot of people asking me, do I have a fencing business? No, I don't, but I'm thinking about starting one. What do they do? Okay, start at the first one, a permit. So are they required to submit a design fencing drawing? It doesn't say anything like that in there, but I would assume you just don't want some junky fence contractor putting, you want something to give out a $40 permit. Well, it's 50 actually.
It's 50, yeah.
Yeah. But don't you want some kind of permit drawing or something submitted?
Yeah, they have the form. It has the drawing where you draw it on there. It doesn't have to be architectural perfect.
The building permit and the form to draw your drawing on was sent with the letters.
And there was 11 people on the list that didn't have fences.
Okay.
There was 43 that did have fences in town or something like that.
All right, so they have to go there, they fill that out, put the fence up. Say you want to put up the 2-foot fence on top of the pool. You want to put up a deck around the pool that would stop someone from getting in and out. How do you go about... I mean, would that be the same permit? You know, a fence on top of the pool or a deck around it. I'm sure you've seen them before. You had some pictures up there. They make decks that go around. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't make them. You got to buy it or build it or whatever, a deck around your pool. So that would, you just kind of sketch something on the photograph on the permit?
No, our building guy, yeah. I guess you would.
Okay.
Our building guy's not here, but...
He's right
Oh, he's right there. There you are.
So do we have to have a permit to build a deck around the pool?
Around the outside
around
of the pool.
Around the outside of the pool?
We do have a...
You have to have a fence on
okay.
that deck.
All right.
Yeah.
2 feet higher than the pool.
Mm-hmm.
Do.
A permit for the 2 foot above.
The one that just clamps on it or whatever?
No, don't
I mean, it's pre-manufactured type thing.
It has to lock. You can't clamp.
Because they have one. Yeah, they have one that's called a promenade deck where you can actually live like 8 inches. But that, if we built one that was like 2 feet wide around the pool that's connected to our existing deck.
If it's a permanent structure, then
our pool is not a permanent structure, so it's kind of part of the thing. We could build it. So, in other words, we don't have to worry about anything, but we need to look into doing something for next year, is what you're telling us. And the other people that didn't get a notice don't have to worry about anything next year. This year, if they didn't get notified, but they need to worry about... I mean, I don't understand...
Where we stand. Where we personally stand, since we did not get notified what our options are.
30 days
yes,
comes in after you get notified,
agree
right?
With, yeah. We agree with the safety.
So,
This is a lawyer right here, sitting right in front of you.
So the ordinance was passed. At the moment it was passed, anybody that had a pool was supposed to get a deck. But the board decided that it would go ahead and send out notices to anybody that it knew, and that there's a grace period before the staff is directed to enforce the ordinance. So I think what that means is that even though you didn't get a letter, you're supposed to be in compliance with the ordinance. And as long as you're looking to get everything put together and do it the right way, then staff's probably not going to write you a ticket for $200.
So in other words, we
probably
found out.
That's,
well, you have to get the...
That's what they said I told you the other day when you came to the office, that if you were making an attempt to do this, you come in and get a building permit. We find that as a good faith effort on your part.
Okay.
Well, we know.
I thought we were going to have the drain or a pool after spending $300.
We actually just had someone come in on Friday morning, and I talked to him, and they're building their fence a portion at a time because he only has so much time in his life, and on the weekends his dad comes over and they build a portion of it, and he doesn't think he's going to get it done in the 30 days. And I'm like, you're showing progress.
Okay.
He's showing progress. He's getting things done.
I mean, we found
and
out four
the board
days
is,
ago, and there's just no
the
way
board's
we're get
pretty
it
generous on. I mean, we're not out there to hurt people. We want to keep people safe. And there's a state law. If you have a pool, you have to have a fence too. So.
Yeah.
Well, they should got everybody fired off.
Well,
$200
and the original ordinance that you guys wrote back in the 90s says there has to be a 6-foot fence.
Correct.
So we took that out of there and we put a 4-foot fence. The state law is 3.5 feet. So we went a half a foot higher than the state law.
The reason we didn't do them is because any 6-7-year-old can climb a 4-foot fence.
And then we talked
as
to.
As you saw in there, you can climb the ladder.
I know. That one video that we had, we were going to play, but then it started to decide to play other things. But that being said, we talked to an insurance agent during when we were doing the pool ordinance, and they actually put some stuff on our Facebook live feed that there's one insurance company, if they find out you have a pool and don't have a fence, they won't cover a claim. So you're on the hook
for it. That's why our ladder comes out and it gets covered every night, is because we understand that that would be our personal responsibility.
Yeah.
If the pool's not in use, the ladder's not in there. They can't get in.
And our pool is 4'7" tall. You can't climb our pool.
Yeah.
You got to be pretty good.
Unless you're that little 2-year-old that can
barely
scale walls.
He doesn't have the
pool
to scale.
Exactly.
He would have to scale the side of a vinyl pool.
Well, so the next thing is to draw a deck and stuff around it, which is the way we're leaning to comply to that. That's going to take me a couple weeks to draw that up.
I think,
which is going to be real close to July's.
I think you're looking into it a little bit too. That doesn't have to be perfect on the drawing.
Yeah, he said it doesn't have to be exact specifications.
Yeah,
you're
making it a little more difficult than it is.
Okay.
You just draw it the best you can.
$200 a day's got people a little.
So you draw it the best that you can, and you show that you're making progress to comply.
All right.
And it makes the village happy. So. Yeah. No, it's and you don't have to have a perfect architectural drawing on it to.
He's an engineer.
So. I know his brain thinks that way, and I get it. I'm not. I mean, I'd get crayons out and just get something close to what needs to be. Yes, Pam.
I didn't know you had put your name on the list, but I wanted to know how many kids have passed away by drowning in Tolono. Are you also going to put a fence around the pond? And where are these parents that are supposed to be disciplining their kids? And talking and watching them, period. Can you just put a privacy, no trespass, and that would somewhat help you a little? I mean, my fence, I have a fence.
Yeah.
Because the problem is when we had our pool, people walked by and there was a mess with the kids. So we decided with all the kids' stuff and older people, we decided to just fence it so we can have a little greenway, you know, with all the problems we have it. So I wanted to know about the ponds. Are they also, the kids can want to go fishing, if these parents are not watching the kids or disciplining their kids, kids can go for a swim in that pond. So I just don't know.
And ponds are not made for swimming, they're made for retention.
Exactly.
They're not. And pools are made specifically for swimming, and that's what attracts the kids to the pools, for swimming. The ponds aren't made for that, so that's why they don't need to be fenced.
When kids see water,
so.
And they want to take a swim.
True, but they're made for fishing, and they're made for the retention of the water, so it doesn't flood the subdivisions, but they're not made for swimming. So we're not going to do an ordinance for fencing those.
Water is water. and kids gonna be kids. And a lot of parents do not watch their kids or discipline their kids. So I feel like, what is your rule on that then?
On what? We're not gonna fence up the retention ponds.
I'm not asking you to, because I don't want my mortgage go up or anything like that. I'm just wanted to know, because I have a lot of friends I know, and some of them don't even have a fence around their pool yet. And some of them didn't know. And just the talking against neighbors, and we hear that, and we're like, well, so I just want to put it out.
Okay.
I don't care if you fence or you don't fence. I just want to figure out, somebody go back and say, what happened to me? I said, I didn't bring it up.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right. Anybody else want to talk that didn't sign up? Oh, no, that's Penny. Did you? Are you happy with what he said?
No, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he finally got all my questions answered.
I think he did in the back.
In the back? Did you want to talk?
The only thing I wanted to talk about, my name is David Hall. My wife and I, we live over at 309 Country Lane in Deer Path. And we ain't come here to cause no scene. But the question I have is, it's about the water.
Mm-hmm.
Because our water quality, we've lived here about 15 years now, and particularly the last 60 days, it has been very bad. And I've called the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, spoken to Matthew Talbert. Haven't spoken to Mr. Craven yet because he's a very busy man. Have spoken to Mr. Flanagan, Mike Flanagan, and some other people. And they were telling me they tested it and the chlorine's very low. He said if it was my house, he said basically you should be at a boil order. So I don't know exactly what's going on. I do understand that Mr. Curry retired about a year ago, maybe 6 months ago. So I don't know if the problem is between the keyboard and chair, if it's a training issue, or we just had some bad luck and we've had a lot of rain. But what I would like to know is if I can have somebody come out to my house, test the water, send it over to American Water Supply, and let me know if I have an issue or if I don't. Because my family do drink that water, so do I, and our dogs as well. So if somebody could, because I think that's a very relevant and important issue, but they tested that puppy at the hydrant, they tested it at my house, and tested it across town, and it was low at all three places. I did also find out that the city has not had an inspection since September 2013. Don't worry, y'all are on the list, and they'll be coming very, very soon. But I just wanted to know if y'all had any ideas on this, because when I checked with my neighbors, everybody thought it was in, because it all tasted like a swimming pool because of the chlorine. And so we just wanted to know if y'all had reports, because I'm sure y'all live here in town, you probably drink some of that same water, and or did it just not bother you, or y'all just bottle it up? That's the only question I had.
They actually flush, I know, the hydrant. Because when I call and I say, hey, I'm drinking bleach, after effects is burning my throat. And they said, well, we're going to drain, they did the hydrant. But after they drained it, apparently it was about bare minimum. They could, they, the guy tested and said, hey, it's too low. It needs, it, now it's too much. Now it's barely making it. So we're not sure if you would drink the water.
If it's a bleachy smell, the chlorine's too hot.
Exactly. And then they run the hydrant, and then it went too low, right about the minimum. We've been buying bottled water for over a month now. For dogs and ourselves.
I didn't know about this. When you called Village Hall, we put a work order in. That's what I came out and flushed it. We tested the hydrants. Yesterday we had 1.2. So that was well above the minimum. So we're good there. We had, I sent a sample in yesterday afternoon, tested it from the hydrant, came back fine. I called Randy, what was it? Lisa Hall?
Lisa Hall. Okay. I called
and left a message on your phone Friday. And said that I wanted to come and take a sample at your house. I got no reply Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. That's when I decided I would take the sample from the hydrant, which I did. Took that to Illinois American. They tested it and came back.
And that's kind of the problem. If you don't call us, it takes forever for it to come down to us. Like if you call the EPA or you call American Water.
Well, we called them first. I called the water company and said, it's been a month.
But we're the water company. You called the Village of Tolono?
I called the village and I spoke to the lady at the water bill.
She okay.
And I think it was her.
Murdered
I asked her what okay. to do with the situation, so they have a town meeting.
When was that?
Next Tuesday, I asked her what time that's where we should go, which we didn't know
we could go.
So
you got a work order a week ago on it?
Last week, probably Thursday.
So. They stated that the water needs to be tested three times a month. They need to be tested.
But needless to say, we got a real fast response from Mr. Talbert, Illinois EPA. He called me back the same day, came out and tested the exact same day, and talked to Mike Flanagan. He called me the next day. And like I say, I'm assuming that's Mr. Craven. I've never met the gentleman, but I assume it is. And or Graven, I apologize if I mispronounce your name. But my point is that, you know, they were telling us it was so low, and again, nobody was notified. I didn't know anything about it. And if the water's good to drink, that's great. But I feel like if we didn't come to this meeting tonight, we probably wouldn't have found out that it was tasting very good until I had, you know, called him back out here anyway. But if you tell me it's good, I assume you're Mr. Graven?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Have you noticed the difference in the smell?
I haven't smelled it.
The smell
it works
is gone
like
down. Right, one day, because they told me not to just drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
So I haven't tested because I have stomach issue, and any little thing can throw me off. And that's why when my husband just buy a bottle of water for the dogs and stuff, and that's what we do. But I haven't really asked my neighbors, but a lot of them was complaining about it too.
Well, and the gentleman told me that somebody else had called too.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just us. Somebody else had called. Both the EPA and somebody else have also called the village of Tonoma. So it wasn't just the Halls calling the racket, you know.
Yeah.
So, and we, like I said, we just want clean water. You know, we figure if we pay the water bill on time, we'd like to, you know, be a little bit clean. I mean, you know, heaven forbid. So it doesn't make any difference to me. It's not, I'm not trying to assign blame or point fingers at anybody. We
why
just want some clean water. That's
clean.
All. No big deal. It ain't a personal thing. I don't even know you, so I don't have anything to
do. Like I said, if we know about it, we'll do something about it to rectify the problem.
We appreciate it. Have they
not
scheduled
long.
The time when they're going to come out and do that inspection, or do they normally show up unannounced? Because he told me it's been 5 years, like I said, September 2013.
Well, with anything with the state, it doesn't happen real fast.
Right.
So.
Well, I know he's got 19 cameras. The man told me everybody else is retired. So, you know, maybe they all took the train like Mr. Curry did. So.
Yeah,
which I don't blame them, you know.
Yeah.
Get your pension before they're broke. I understand. So, that's cool.
All right. All right. Okay, let's do engineering and get you guys up here and you can do your PowerPoint real quick.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know. Did she fall down?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, fire call.
This
wherever you want to go.
From the camera?
I can see you there.
Yep. Okay, we're good. All right. I'm Brian Woodruff with ESU. This is my colleague, David Reitzman. I was back here a few weeks ago presenting to Mosia. We basically are an energy services company, and we've been working with Mayor and Matt Graven on looking at the infrastructure for Tolono. Have a quick presentation, and then a request, and then we'll be on our way. So, go to the next slide. So really, outline really tonight, we presented a few weeks ago, and what we do is we help cities and schools upgrade their infrastructure. And we do an initial analysis to see what are the needs, what can help the village, and then part of that process is doing this initial analysis, looking at the utility bills, and bringing that finding to you all for your consideration, go out to an RFP to select a partner. So that's what today is really, educating you on what we found, working with your village staff. David here is a certified engineer, so we're going to cover that, cover how we think what we found helps the village and kind of fits with the goals that we've heard from you all and from Mayor and from Matt, and take questions, and then we'll chart out those next steps. And really, this is a kind of what we think of this as a go or no go decision for the village to move forward in the process of development, or say this is kind of enough for us right now, if that all makes sense. Feel free to ask questions at any time, make more conversation, and not just stand and deliver. I'm sure you guys have enough of that. Folks come up here talking to you now. But a little bit on ESG, a few new faces from the last meeting, but. Few of you all saw our presentation last, but we are an energy services company based out of Evansville, Indiana. We do projects all over the country for schools and universities. We're finishing a two-phase project at the University of Illinois, $60 million, fixing up the energy infrastructure, lights, heating, cooling, building insulation, and really we work with our customers to help save money increase occupant safety and comfort and fix infrastructure. And how we do this is through something called performance contracting. And basically it is a buying vehicle that allows you to take the savings from fixing out the lights or getting more accurate water meter readings, and that pays for the project. So it's a very popular way of procuring infrastructure equipment if you don't have the capital to pay for it up front. And that's how the conversation got started, is how can the energy savings from improving the environment help the village upgrade some critical infrastructure. So that's just a little high level about who we are as a company. Been in business for about 25 years. We're owned by a public utility. So this is all we do, is fixing up infrastructure in this way. Next slide. So really, talking with the mayor and talking with Matt, we first wanted to learn the key goals for Tolono. We don't sell any single kind of product or, you know, gadget. What we do is we design a project that fits your needs. So we wanted to hear what was your key concerns, your goals, and that's what we captured right there. So really attracting in new residents. I think it's fantastic. Y'all are a veteran community to Urbana-Champaign, trying to attract new residents, great high school in the area, great school system, trying to provide better services and upgrade the infrastructure for future growth. Some of the things that you're working towards on that path initiative-wise would be lowering costs, adding efficiencies, saving money, investing in the infrastructure, finding a way to hire locally were also things that were very important as well. Then amongst the pressures, and this, you know, I'm a lifelong Illinois resident, these pressures are something I see everywhere I go. I'm from the Quad Cities, and they're a shrinking Rust Belt community. They're always finding ways, trying to face similar pressures. But aging infrastructure, the state is not helpful with communities, trying to find ways to maintain services. And, you know, sometimes staffing resources, outside of financial resources, staffing resources is a pressure. And so we took that and we thought, how can ESG and this infrastructure project help Tolono and address these key areas? Next slide, please. That is very small. I apologize. So I'll walk through just a little bit. So really, we thought, talking with Matt, the mayor, from the goals you all have and the initiatives and the pressures, what would be most beneficial? We looked at a sustainable funding model that utilizes savings from the project to pay for itself over the time of the project that allows the village to save your capital resources. Also, a part of this energy savings piece is guaranteeing those savings, so it shifts the risk from the village Tolono onto ESG. If, for one example, for 1 month, the energy savings don't hit the projections, then ESG cuts a check to cover that difference. So it's just a lot of risk that you typically don't see in other projects, if there's cost overruns, things of that nature. So that's also something we want to bring to this pie. Also, turnkey project management. A lot of municipalities and universities like the services we provide because essentially it's the easy button. Instead of managing suppliers and vendors and architects and engineers and all the subcontractors you're managing, there's one company, ESG, that manages the whole construction process, assists with getting financing, and you manage that relationship. So instead of trying to have your arms around all those different stakeholders and players, it's one point of accountability. And then also the other thing that, in conversations with Matt, in particular to Tolono, were the customized solutions. So what I mean by that is, we don't sell any kind of rep or technology, so we don't have a deal with Badger for meters or Census or any solar panel provider. We have no obligation that way. So whatever equipment your staff has that you like, we will happily, you know, find a way to procure it and install it. And that was specifically around the water meter piece that was very, very positive. So that's at a high level how we believe ESG can help Tolono, and that's aligned with those goals. I talk very fast. If Matt knows me by now, I drink a ton of coffee. So I'll take a pause. Any questions so far? Excellent.
You said that you are owned by a public utility?
Yes.
Which public utility?
Vectren. So they cover southern Indiana. So we're based on Evansville. So you're thinking, what is this business case analysis? What does this mean? Essentially, in our how we work with our customers, we look at, we do kind of an initial preliminary engineering study. We call it business case analysis. And what it is doing an initial analysis to see, is there a project here where the energy savings can pay for the cost of the project? It's very high level, and it's to give you the ammunition, the knowledge, to say this is worth going forward and doing an RFP, or maybe not. And so we looked at utility bills, we walked the facilities, we looked at the wastewater treatment plant. David's a specialist in the wastewater, he's gonna kind of cover what we found. I do not envy his job. He gets to walk around all wonderful wastewater treatment plants in the US. And then we also looked at sewer rates, things like that. And one thing we want to really commend you all is actually the services you're providing the village, and your rates are fantastic. And next slide on that. Again, very small, and this should be in the meeting minutes, but you see here, it's fantastic. In the area, you are providing these services at a very economical rate for your residents, and you should be very proud of that. So we looked at your rates, your utility rates, your costs, and did some preliminary engineering analysis to see what upgrades could pay for themselves by the energy savings they generate, if that makes sense. So I'm going to hand it over to David now, and he's going to kind of walk through the engineering piece, and then we'll go through some financial impacts, and then that'll be it.
So the low rate is a good news, bad news type of thing. If you looked over a 20-year cycle, people leapfrog each other because you got to reinvest in infrastructure and raise rates to do that. So people move up, and then the people that did it 10 years ago, they're moving down. So it's a constant leapfrog. So good news, you're at the bottom, but the bad news is you're not going to stay there forever. So go ahead and go to the next one. So they asked me to do was look at your wastewater treatment plant, look at your lift stations, and we talked about water meters. Probably not going to tell you anything you don't already know tonight. You know, you've got some older infrastructure and equipment. You're going to have to do some upgrades. So we looked at kind of what the size of the box is, what would be kind of the minimum you could do to get some efficiencies out of it while you're doing more work, or what would be kind of the ultimate upgrade. With your lift stations, we did a very cursory overview of those, a visual check, try to get some condition assessment information. I'll go through that in a minute. And looked at your water meters. Water meters are important because for your water utility, that's your cash register. And it determines not only your revenue for your water, but also for your sewer. They're all linked together. And so because they're mechanical devices, as they slow down, they read less, which means you're making less money. And you currently have an older drive-by technology. It's starting to get outdated. But most importantly, it's driven by the age of the meters and how they slow down over time. So we just did a cursory evaluation, more in-depth. We'll be doing water audits and meter testing to really quantify what that non-revenue water loss, which is a fancy word for lost money. We don't like that. Go ahead and move next. At the wastewater plant, you've got about a 40-year-old plant that's supposed to be, has about a 20-year life. So it's on its last legs. It's still meeting permit. That's the good news. So obviously you've got some great people out there maintaining it and keeping it going while you're doing it, but you're going to have some big decisions to make here in the coming years on how to replace that, how to fund it, how to redo it. So there are some kind of minor things that can be done to reduce the cost of operation. You spend about $45,000 a year in electricity. That sounds like a big number, but compared to a lot of the places I see, that's a very moderate economical amount. But there still is some technologies out there that could reduce some air supply, kind of reduce more automatic operation of pumps and blowers and things, and lower that efficiency down. And while you're doing that, also do some minimal repairs, maybe extend the life a little bit, make sure that's safe for everybody out there. Lift stations, some of those are pretty old, coming up on 20 plus years. They're in varying conditions. Some of them are on the ragged edge of failure. Fortunately, lift stations come with 100% redundancy. So the most common maintenance strategy is run to failure, which, so if one pump fails, you still got a backup there that can be run and keep you going so nobody's basements are flooded. But You've got some corrosion areas. There's going to have to be some upgrades, some electrical systems are done. So on a case-by-case basis, some of them just need some spit polish, and some of them are going to have to be redone from scratch. You're in the process of doing some flow testing, which is great because that's going to give you a good fact-based understanding if what you've got there is sized correctly. So getting the information of that to tune this analysis will help. And the water meters, as I said, if you've all seen these, they're mechanical devices. They vary. So typically within the Midwest, we have kind of hard water, especially if you've got sandy deposits. Those will accelerate repair and cause to read less, which means you're paying for less water than what they're doing. And so that revenue will help pay for the improvement, as well as getting some big efficiency gains. It's a rapidly changing market for these meter reading systems. You're getting a lot of technology into them. You can literally have an app on your phone that'll connect to the bill and see what your daily, weekly, hourly, monthly rate is, let you know if you've got lost leaky toilets. There's all sorts of neat stuff that can be done with that, as well as driving more information into the utility to manage it. I guess I'm going to
take it too fast.
No, you're fine. So here's the kind of the scope of recommendations that we put together. And this was us putting our crystal ball and kind of reading your minds of what would make sense of what a project might look like. So at the wastewater treatment plant, it was replacing the blowers and adding some dissolved oxygen control. That's that major fast payback item that's out there. Looking at some of the roof stations for repair and replacement, and then all new water meters across the roof. So blew through that fast. You guys got any questions on any particular item?
So this is a high-level initial analysis. So what we have in the next slide will be a sample cash flow. This is a summary. And really, from the few days of walking facilities, from our experience in this industry and looking at benchmark numbers, the key takeaway here from what we found is that if doing those upgrades would result in a positive cash flow over the term of the project. So these numbers are, they're not final fixed numbers. That happens after walking contractors. That's a much more lengthy, time-intensive process. Really, this is, at this point in the game, we are confident that there is a project that makes sense. And the important thing to take away is that the entire time I've been saying to Matt and Mayor that we don't know, we'll see what happens, if it'll pay for itself. Because sometimes you don't see this. Sometimes you do this initial analysis, you do the initial walkthroughs, and the savings just aren't there to pay off the equipment over that term. We had looked at street lighting to maybe see if there's a way to upgrade street lights, buy back from the utility and upgrade them so that the village could experience those savings. Economically, it didn't pencil out at this level. And so from our experience, doing this snapshot is accurate in the sense that if it's not going to pencil out now, doing that deeper analysis, it's still not going to work. So we have the savings that covers the annual payment, finance investment, that you see there, and then after 13 years, then there's that positive cash flow, actually making the village money off investing in your infrastructure. There's a lot of information here. We focus primarily on those facilities because those are your main energy users. There's the police station, village hall, but in reality, compared to the wastewater treatment plant, not too much energy is used in these facilities. So, any questions? There's a ton of information here, so very important slide. I want to make sure there's any questions, comments, thoughts. Get this out. Great. So really looking at these types of programs, some of the key benefits to the village, reducing your energy and operating costs. That's where a lot of the conversation started, was finding ways to save money, invest in infrastructure, and reducing long-term capital costs as well. is also a key benefit of shifting that risk away from the village onto ESG. A lot of municipalities choose that path because when you go out to do these projects themselves, there is that risk that maybe the savings won't be there. This procurement performance contracting guarantees it and allows you to shift and hedge that risk. And then for the residents, I believe the last time I attended a village, there was a conversation around water meters. So new meters, new infrastructure, greater data analytics, that has a direct benefit to the community that you can sell to the community and really be proud that you're maintaining the infrastructure. Also, safety issues with the lift stations, with the water treatment plan, those are benefits to the community overall. Next slide, please. And then something we like to add into these projects for consideration is marketing and community engagement. So hiring local, very important. We work to hire local. Creating project websites, really making sure these benefits are touted across the community so that the community knows the village is investing their funds in a way that's sensible, sound, and clear. We also do customized project websites, various media blasts to make sure that you're getting the positive attention for this investment that you should. Next slide, please. So really in summary, we started off on this journey working with Matt, working with the mayor, to look to find ways to upgrade the infrastructure, really focus around that growth potential the village may see with potential adding in Philo, some new trailer park initiatives, adding in more and more residents. And so we looked at the water infrastructure, wastewater infrastructure, to find a way to create a sustainable funding model that pays for itself, preserves your capital, address your aging infrastructure, and prevent that catastrophic failure. And really, we believe that will help align the village for growth, for future growth and expansion. And so, next slide. So really, where are we right now? We've done this initial phase at no cost to the village. We understand that this initial analysis, most villages and schools, universities, don't have the staff support to do this initial groundwork. So at this point, we've done this initial analysis, and it's to the village's approval to go out to RFP to select an energy partner. That partner will then do an investment grade audit, a deeper study, that will look at everything that was just presented, build out the finances, the final costs, do a legal review, a financial review, and then go to contract. So today's proposal and really today's request is to decide to vote on an RFP or not, based off of the business case analysis that we provided. So I think from our experience, we always say we don't know because sometimes you don't get the results that we found. So it's a very exciting opportunity. The fact that you can take that money and invest in the infrastructure, get new infrastructure, and generate a positive return and a profit is phenomenal. And so from our perspective, we would highly recommend moving forward through this process. And we'll take any questions. I'll hand out cards afterwards. Follow up with me at any time. But thank you very much for your time, Matt. Thank you very much for your time, Mayor. Tim as well. We'll be working with Tim as well. But take any questions you all have.
Questions, guys? We have three choices on this. We can vote to go up to RFP. We can table it and let you guys think about it. Or we can say we won't do it at all.
Can you go back to the cost slide?
That one?
We can't see that.
Oh, I can see it.
What's the cost?
Technology's very
close. Simple video comes in first.
I think I just get rid of the PowerPoint altogether. It's awesome.
We're gonna have to give this job to Brandy.
I know, we're going to. You're like have to go to somebody who actually knows what they're
doing. What was the cost on that slide?
It was,
I know, it's
1.1. And so the key thing on the cost, so right now, benchmark number is 1.1 million. So
I'm sorry.
1.1 million. And
I think she posted it. There you go. You guys will all get that slide.
Yep.
They'll get that too. I can forward it to you.
Okay.
So the key thing to keep in mind with that is that that is not the final number. So once you go to RP as the partner, then you do a full engineering study, and that number could change. And honestly, it could go up or down. It could even change if you decide not to look at the lift stations, for example. So there's a full investment grade engineering study that's done, and that will definitely change the final contract value. That's just initial benchmark numbers based off of the solution of the slip that we found at this stage. We're always hesitant to throw out a number because it's stuck in your head. But there is that initial analysis that is important.
Okay. Do we need to talk to our wastewater management people yet? Get their input as well? If they're going to continue managing the facility? And you want to make giant changes without taking in who's going to be running it.
Yeah. Yes, but in the same token, they're just hired to maintain it. So, to me, I'm a little disappointed because kind of some of this stuff that found just by doing a initial review.
This should have been, came to us.
Should have
sooner.
Probably been addressed.
Especially that right there. That's ready to fall in.
Yeah, I understand they're there to maintain what we have, but
that's
also
not maintained.
I also think they have a responsibility that they should. And I've kind of addressed this from day one, that a lot of our stuff is outdated. I know the breaker system at the plant, you can't even get those breakers anymore. So if it goes bad, you're getting a refurbished one, and you're could work, could not work.
Hope it lasts for a while.
Yeah.
Is there an expense to us to go to the RFP process?
Time is the end. And then when you do the engineering, the investment grade audit, this is called a PDA, which is a project development agreement. And that is negotiated, and so that basically would be, there would be a cost of that, and that would scale based on what is in the scope. And for example, it could be X dollar. It really depends on the scope of that agreement, but more engineering done, the higher that goes up. And really that just covers our cost to engineer the rest of the project. And then if you go down to the next steps, please.
Rob,
next
sorry.
Step, sorry.
So. If you so if you go down to all the way, if you look at the next
larger.
Steps,
I can say make it larger than it goes away. Is this one?
Less
which
one?
One,
two more. There we go. There perfect. Go. So,
and I can't go prod forth. I don't think, maybe.
We need something better than PowerPoint.
Anyway,
so the project development agreement, which is negotiated on, so the process is you go out to RFP, you select a partner. And then our team with the village would negotiate the project development agreement, what would be incorporated into it, what would be looked at, that cost is agreed upon, and then let's say at the contract approval, the village decides not to go with it. You still didn't have a fully engineered project, but then that fee is paid to us to cover that risk. But if you do go forward, then that engineering cost gets rolled into the project. So that's when that would get activated.
So could you give us like a rough estimate of case we go to RFP and we decide not to do it? I mean, I know you can't do it right now.
Yeah.
But is that something you can think of to give us a rough estimate what it would cost us?
I think we probably could. It really depends on the scope that's included. And so that is a hard question to answer. But I can check our engineering team.
Okay.
Thank you.
Like not to exceed something.
Yep.
10%.
10%?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you're looking to do $1 million project for $300,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. So. Yes, sir.
Plus or minus.
Is it fair to say that basically the scope of the project is to look at overall energy systems? And my concern is if we're looking at energy systems for the sewer plant, but we've got an ancient sewer plant, are we not planning for some serious capital investments that don't have anything to do with energy savings?
That's a great question. So you're asking is, would the village town be potentially wasting money if you've got a much bigger investment later on.
Yes.
And so exactly. That's a very, something we want to take very seriously. And if early in the process, we come to the mutual conclusion that it doesn't make any sense to put any money in this because you're going to replace it in a couple of years, you just kick it out and keep moving on. However, there could be things that you're going to make sense to do anyway and could be part of the final plan or design. You're going to take that into account. So we don't want you to waste any money on that.
It's like lift stations we have to do.
They're not going
away. They're not going away.
Yeah. So. If you're going to build a treatment plant in a completely different location or something, but you're probably not, you're probably going to rebuild it from the inside out. So, but we're going to get a little more in depth into the engineering details to give you a clear guidance on it.
I think the only point, I don't have any opinion on this whatsoever, is I did see another community where, because of environmental issues, we had to do significant upgrade to the sewer system. The governor has on his desk something that everybody anticipates signing, which is an extension of the act that encourages private systems to buy public systems. Under that act, a system that's in really bad shape is worth a lot more money than a system that's in really good shape. So anything that you do to spend on the system means you're going to be keeping that system because you're not going to get it paid back if you sell the system. If you were to ever consider selling the system, the time to do it is while it's in really bad shape. So you had a consultant who already kind of looked at our system and said it's pretty bad. Mm-hmm. And what they're finding isn't anything that's inconsistent with what we already know. And as you're looking down the road, I think you're looking at spending millions of dollars, not $1 million, on your system. And whether or not you can afford to do that is a question.
That's a good point. Any other discussion?
I say we keep thinking about it.
And that's something we can entertain too, is selling the system altogether. We've kind of hit around it, and there's, I think we have a split table on that. I mean, our rates will double. They'll double sewer and water rates. That's what Fisher is. I had met with the water guy.
Dave.
Met with Dave the other day, and we were comparing his bill and my bill, and he pays a lot, I mean, over double than what I pay.
Well, ours is going to have to go up.
Either way, you're correct.
Fisher's situation.
That's the town we're talking about.
There was 100% unanimous board disapproval of selling the system. And then when the board started inventorying what they had, and then they realized what they're going to have to spend, it wasn't on the water side, it was on the sewer side, the issues. And they did the projections on what they were going to have to charge in order to be able to keep the sewer system. In year four, they were at the same rate with what they are now. In year six, they were about 20% higher. And so as you went further out, the cost of scale, the benefits of scale, way outweighed any kind of profit that's already built into the private utilities system. So that's at that point when they saw that, they're like, we can't afford to take on $6 million of debt. And then they were able to sell their system. So that's what you need to think through. I'm not advocating that you sell your system. I'm just saying, if you're going to think about ever selling it, if you want to get out of it, the time to get out of it when it's in really bad shape, if the governor signs the bill.
So what's the wish? So we can get these guys somewhere. You guys want to think about it? You want to vote on it?
Think about it.
I feel like I want to continue to think about it.
Jared?
I don't want to do anything right now.
Terrence?
I'm in agreement with that. I don't want to do anything right now. We'd love to know where the money would come from.
Yeah, there's some questions that need to be answered on our part before we commit to something.
Will you do any work on grants or anything through the state?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So we have a whole, we have a team controlling that does grants, state, federal.
We've got $8.5 million in money for utilities for rebates and energy projects from the state.
Cool. All right, I think we're gonna table it for now. So it's a good presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. I'll get up cards and I'll follow up with you all, and have any questions, please feel free to reach out at any time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Or some other.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Matt, do you have anything else to talk about? I was going to make a note, because in your note to me, which I didn't forward to the board, unless you did, I see. Because Matt didn't think he was going to be here today, but kind of hard to play baseball when it's lightning and thundering. You talked to Talbot, the EPA guy.
Yes. He came to the office. He did a water sample at the office. Again, really low chlorine there, which he said he's done this in the past and had the same results. So he knows that that happens. We tested chlorine at the corner of Walnut and Country Lane, and we were well above minimum there, so it wasn't like, and we had just flushed the day before, and like I said, yesterday I tested it after sat all weekend, and we had higher chlorine, so that.
Well, and you also said American Water had ran out of chlorine at the tank, so
right.
They can't put any extra chlorine in the tank right now.
We had a dip last week. They're supposed to add chlorine at the ground storage tank, so I think they completely ran their hypochloride out. So when it gets hot, the chlorine level drops in the system. When it comes to the tank, it sits there. Drops even further and goes out into our system, it drops even further. So when it starts out low and they're not adding anything to it, that just puts us in a world of hurt. Then we get the complaints, which I understand, you know, you got smell and taste issues, and we have been doing a lot of flushing. So we're trying to resolve these problems, but it doesn't seem like we're get ahead of it. So goes out into our system, so it drops even further.
Facebook. He's checking for questions.
So, that's what Zach was doing. I guess there's a bunch of comments.
We tested today at the tank and we had 5, which is really high. We're usually getting around 3 to 3.5. And that's micrograms per liter. But, you know, it'll probably even out here within the next week or so, so we'll get back to our constant 3, 3.5. But again, it's hard to regulate when, you know, they're not adding the chlorine to the system to help us out. And, you know, it dissipates when it goes out of the system, then we do have problems. So, and that's something I can't control is how much they're adding at the tank. Because when Matt Talbot came, we tested at the tank and it was low there. So we walked into their building and their testers that are mounted in the wall, they were way lower than what we usually read. So, and then I was told by Illinois American to stay out of the building. So
all of our problems are stemming from Illinois American Water, isn't it?
Some. not all. Some of it is, we've had like rust particles in the water, and you know, we've been flushing to try and get rid of that.
Is there a possibility you could flush too much at one time?
I'd say so.
I don't know.
Just logically thinking, if you're flushing a bunch, you're stirring up.
Well, and this is what I wanted Illinois American to do, is come in and check their tank. Because Max and I flushed probably 20 minutes, half a block away, and we never did get away from the rust property. It came way down.
I think we need a visit from David Farrar.
And he said that they did a inspection in 2015.
Not even into the meeting.
13.
Yeah, David. 2013. Yeah, because... Okay. We should have known this when I met with them, but we didn't have these problems then, and running out of chlorine is not kind of acceptable. They hadn't been putting it in.
Right.
And we had that big heat, which is going to make the chlorine go down.
Yeah.
And if we're getting a bunch of particles from there.
And he had problems getting a hold of them, too.
And we don't know that that's coming from the tank, but I'd like them to say yes or no.
They could verify.
Right. And he's going, well, it's on the inspection for fall of this year or spring next year. It's like, well, that doesn't really help me out now, because I don't know what's in there. If, you know, we've got scaling on the inside of the tank, then you know, it's not helping us, because you know, then we can't get rid of the particles. So.
Was 13 when they added that new pump house, or the?
That.
I remember when they added it, because it lowered the water pressure for the car wash, mm-hmm. and almost hurt their pumps. So, and but you did have some troubles getting hold of American Water and getting them to call you back. Is that right?
With the production superintendent or supervisor, yes. Then I finally contacted David,
mm-hmm.
and I got a response pretty quick after that. So
that's good.
A lot of it was just getting, they had to replace the key because we couldn't hardly get in the gate. They replaced the lock, and we couldn't get in for over a week. Take our samples, which we're supposed to have daily. That kind of didn't sit well either with me, so.
Okay. All right, anything else? And we also have, once we get a schedule done on flushing, one of our part-timers is our volunteer firefighter too, so he knows how to flush meters. So we can put him in a little Toro thing, and he can drive around and flush meters all day long once Matt gets a pattern set up.
And again, when Ryan was talking, you know, he was talking about you know, lift stations and stuff like that. Well, that's what we got Tim here to do, is, you know, take a detailed evaluation of each pump station, plus start our flow monitoring, which will probably start next year. And we'll have a lot better idea of what we've got to deal with then. So, the East and Walnut Street lift station, that thing is in terrible shape. I didn't realize until we started looking around when ESG came, and then I showed it to him, it's like, that will have catastrophic failure. I mean, it is on the verge now. So,
where's East Street?
That's over by Eastside Park.
Oh, okay.
On the Eastside Park.
It runs the back road.
On the northeast corner of the park?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Excuse me. What does that mean, the red light comes on? So you're there, Tom?
Yeah, and that goes directly to VRH, which operates our system.
Sometimes I see that light on.
Yeah. So.
That's telling me.
That either means there's a pump malfunction, or the water level's got too high in there, or something like that. So.
It's very important.
Right.
Dark.
So there's a lot of stuff we need to do to our lift stations, but again, we don't want to spend a bunch of money on our lift stations if we don't know what's happening within our collection system. You know, it's kind of that's definitely putting the cart before the horse on that, I think. So, you know, we could put all new pumps and stuff in what it was designed for 40 years ago. But the town has changed so much since then that we've added subdivisions. The school has added on. We've got more stuff over here, down here. We've got more infiltration. We need to take into account that before we start doing a bunch of work to our other stations. So.
Just a question. So is what they do something, is that something you can do?
Kind of. They're more energy based from what I've collected, is they're more looking at how can we save money by making things more efficient. We look at that, but we also look at operationally what are going to be the issues, which is one thing I said to Matt, you know, I think ESG from a high level is really hitting the nail on the head with things where they say these pump stations, we need upgrades. And I just looked at a couple with Matt, and I tend to agree just from my quick visual inspection. We're planning on, when we get the contract for the flow study start, our first step is pump station evaluation, pump station drawdown test. The one thing that I was hesitant to blanket cover and basically move forward with these energy efficiency savings was if we complete the flow study and you realize you've got bigger problems on your system that are $1 million, if you're able to reduce, well, I don't know, if you're able to reduce 50,000 gallons a day from going there from INI, that may save you just as much as replacing the blowers at the plant, say, you know. I don't know, that's just speculation. And I told Ryan, I called him today because he had called and just kind of asked if I had any comments, and I just said, you know, the only things I see is before any of this moves forward, in my opinion, it would be wise to wait and see what the flow study produces, because it may tell you that you've got big issues in one part of town, the other part of town's fine, and it'll tell you a bunch about your lift stations. It's going to tell you capacity-wise what your plant is really seeing, not just what it was rated for when it was designed. I mean, you're likely seeing much higher than that during rain events because you have significant INI, but dialing that in to figure out, do you have inflow infiltration during storm events that's 4 times your normal flow, or is it 20 times your normal flow? At which point, you know, whatever that number comes out to be, you know, that would be the time to kind of decide where to spend your dollars. You know, is it worthwhile to do a lining program or sewer replacements over plant improvements? If you're really thinking the plant is going to be overhauled in the next 5 to 10 years, you know, do you want to spend money there, or is it more worthwhile to get your system right and then do one big project out of it? So my only comment was it may be better to look at this stuff once the flow study is completed and we have a little bit more data. Efficiency-wise, energy, I'm sure the blowers there, I'm sure they're outdated. You know, the water meters, same thing. It's like whenever you get something new, it's just a little bit better. And if you plan on replacing the plant in 5 to 10 years, you put a few $100,000 in a blower and stuff out there, 10 years, it might be antiquated. There might be something better out there. But you can transfer that stuff too, obviously, but I just would want to look at it from more of them, not just energy, but also operational, you know, what you're really dealing with. Because some of these pump stations may be, I mean, I've encountered pump stations where the force main is undersized, so you can put whatever pump you in there, but it's never going to pump because you've got an undersized force main there, so it's always going to be surcharged back up the line. So we'll address some of that when we get the pump station evaluation started.
And we looked at the Walnut and East Street lift station, and once Tim looks at that, he'll be able to tell if we can just completely do away with that and just have that as a gravity line. Because
that's another thing we'll look at is,
right,
we're gonna, at the pump stations, we're gonna kind of try to address some of the where these flows are coming from, because the next step, the flow monitoring, we want to make sure we're putting these monitors at places that we're really capturing what we want to know. You know, we don't want to put it somewhere where it's collecting one line. You know, we want to put this in the areas that we're going to be able to isolate drainage areas and say, this whole area has problems. Let's start upstream of this pump station to figure something out. So, and that's one thing. I mean, you guys don't have that many lift stations for your side of town, just generally, but typically those just go at the low points in town, and is what it is. But one big thing that we've kind of always tried to do is, you know, eliminate those because they have a 20-year life. and they have continued operation maintenance costs, whereas a gravity sewer, if you put in a gravity sewer that's maybe a little bit deeper and costs a little bit more up front, it saves in the long run because those are going to last, you know, anywhere from 3 to 4 times as long as a lift station, and the maintenance is basically nothing. I mean, very little, I won't say nothing, but I mean, compared to a lift station, very little.
Any questions, guys?
What's the timeline for the flow test? What point is it?
The flow testing, we will probably start next spring.
The pump station evaluations will start as soon as contract signed and that's good to go. And then the plan was to start the flow testing next spring just because we're going to capture better rain events from spring through that time. I mean, that's the big thing we want to capture is see what storm events do here.
I think.
How long does that usually take?
We've got it slated for 6 months.
Six months now. Okay.
You know, if you end up getting a ton of big storms that we think we have good data, we can cut it short too. I mean, we have that portion of setup is T&M because we've done them before where we do it for 3 or 4 months and it's dry and bone and you can't control the weather. So we end up going another month.
Well, we had that memory in February where we had 6 or 7 inches. So, I mean, that would have been ideal, but. Yeah, we got major problems here or here and here, so.
What else?
That's it.
That's it. Do you have anything on any?
I guess NFT, we should be getting bids in next week for that. Once we get the bids in, I'll come back to you guys for approval and then execution of contracts after that. Don't know what some of the contractors' timelines are. I know a few that are bidding on it. They've already told me.
Water main.
I didn't know if you got a chance to.
For the house that you guys want to cut through sold. So
yeah.
Now we have to wait until we can talk to the new owners.
Sure.
But.
And
the one on.
Depending
home,
on when you guys want to go with
one.
That.
Yeah.
You know, there are other alternatives there. You know, if that's something you guys wanted to push forward. You could do it, and when you get to construction, we could just say, we're cutting it off here, tying in this old main for right now, because we don't have an easement. And it's going to serve the purpose. You're just still going to have like a 2-inch feeder line connecting the two mains, which if you're able to get the easement later on, you could basically find someone to build that section then, or if the easement comes to the main now, then you just keep going. Like,
well, I talked to his daughter a couple days ago, and she was like, well, we would have been for this, but the house sold quicker than they thought. Cause she was all gung-ho. Because it's adding a high fire hydrant back there, too.
Right.
So, and she's like, so, it would been a good selling point for their house, but they didn't need it.
I'm sure they'd rather have it sell, so.
Yeah.
From perspective.
So going from a lift station to gravity flow, you basically all the sewer mains have to be replaced.
It just depends. We would look at it and see, you know, are you replacing a mile of sewer to do this, or are you replacing a couple thousand feet? And then look at that versus the cost of the lift station. I mean, most lift stations anymore to build, even small ones, are $150,000 to replace a complete lift station. Replacing the guts, if your structure and everything's good, you may be getting away with $40,000 or $50,000, depending on what you're willing to do. But you look at that versus the cost of running a sanitary sewer, and if your cost of running a sanitary sewer may be more, but if you look at that versus the operation maintenance and life cycle expectancies of gravity sewer versus lift station, it may still make sense to say, we're going to spend $100,000 more putting a sanitary sewer in, but operation maintenance is going to go to a very minimal cost every year versus the electricity, the payment of operation and maintenance to someone like an ERH or someone. The headaches of the mechanical parts failing, all of that. So.
Any questions, guys? All right. Okay. Well, we don't have police department here.
There's a water sewer connection at Unity.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to talk about the water sewer connection at Unity? And we have to decide if we want to waive that or charge for that. $850, I think.
Yeah, it was right around $700-$800 just for the parts to get Illinois Meter in to do the tap. and the rental of the equipment to do that. That doesn't include the meter. If we install a meter pit outside and a lid, you know, that's going to be additional cost on top of that. So if they install the meter inside, it's not the preferred way as far as I'm concerned, but if they put the meter inside the building, you know, that's going to reduce our cost because we're not going to have a pit, a lid, the setter with the valves on it.
And we would, if we have to replace it in 10 years, we don't have to chase them down because we know where they're at. We can get access to the building.
It's the laser since they're a school. It's just,
yeah, exactly.
We need to do this.
Yeah.
Which location are we talking
about? It's the new wrestling room.
Okay.
And they've pretty much built that whole thing on donations, haven't they?
What's that?
They've pretty much built that whole thing on donations, haven't they?
Yes. Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at.
And
the connection fee is not going to pay for the $800.
Not even close.
Connection fee is what,
$500?
$450.
Yep.
So do we want to just waive it and just fix, hook them up? Or do we want to, them to pay the connection fee, which is going to pay roughly half of what the cost of us hooking it up would be? I don't, I mean.
Who's actually asking for it to be waived?
The athletic director.
It's the alumni association that's really putting it in. It's not the school.
Right.
Yeah. But the school will have to end up paying for the water eventually, too. So.
Right, but I mean, it's, they're the ones who do it in the world.
Shouldn't the school board be asking for it?
Mm-hmm. Athletic director's
athletic
attached
directors.
To the school, so.
He's kind of the head of
it.
Yeah.
It's his
fine
domain.
With him asking for it.
It may be his domain, but I'm not on their board, but he's asking for something that they're going to be responsible to pay for. Later.
Well, it's in the construction costs anyway.
I mean, they're going to have water in there. They have showers.
So I understand that.
So, I mean, so the water is just, we add on to their other water that they're
paying for.
How
much work are you going to do out there?
It depends. It depends if we set a pit outside.
Well, I mean, I'm...
But it's...
outside
we just,
that. You
if
just,
we just tap, and we just dug this up the other day to find the main. Nobody knew what size the main was.
Hmm.
Nobody knew what material type it was. So I had to know all that before I could even get an idea on parts. So we went out with the back truck, dug it up, because even if we called the Julia, they don't know where that stuff's at. So we went out there, and probably within a couple hours, we had it found. So the amount of work we'll have to do, we'll have to dig a little bit more so they can get their machine in there to tap that. But beyond that, it's not much to make the connection on the main.
Cool.
So.
I just want to make sure stuff you're going to do not we're not becoming like SNS or.
I talked to DJ about that. Things go well. He had to rent the equipment from Illinois Meter. So Illinois Meter shot me a price.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like $200 for their guy to come in. We don't have the expertise to do that. We'd have to rent the equipment from them anyhow and buy the parts. So the $200 for them to actually get in there, make the connection so we don't break the main, crack it, I think as well. Good money spent. And, you know, it's probably an hour's worth.
We can do most of the digging to the
gym. We don't do any of the digging to the building because that's all on them. If we were going to do anything, we'd set the meter pit and they'd have to connect it.
Oh, so it's on the school to do the rest of the digging.
Yes.
So then when they get it dug over there, then we'll put the meter in.
If we do it outside. And I'm still waiting here
inside.
For the plumber where they want to put that meter at. So.
Wouldn't it be just because it's in more conditioned environment be better on the meter to be inside? And I'm like, you know, a residence, I know it's tough to get in, but in a situation like that, I think you could get in about any time you needed to.
Yeah. And we've seen probably about the same life out of the meter years. I mean, it's not significant, you know, it's not like half the live lighting, so.
Would it be cheaper for it to be inside?
For us, yes.
And 10 years later, when you have to replace it, it's gonna take you a couple minutes and you're not stuck in a meter pit trying to replace it.
So what's our, I'm kind of confused what our options are here. What are we?
Either we waive the fee to the high school or we charge them the fee, the connection fee. Which we still have to make the connection for them. It's just, are we gonna waive the?
It's gonna cost us $800 or it's gonna cost us $450 or $400. If we waive the fee, we're gonna be out about $400. If we don't waive the fee, we'll be out about $400. If we waive the fee for them, since they're the school, it'll be $800.
And I was trying to put the meter pit outside, so if they ever had any more future expansion, then we would have to add another line, another meter down the road. So it's either, or they can figure out how to do it later down the road to say, again, it's yours from here. So
suggestions? Any motion either way, if you guys want to waive it. Or if you don't want to waive it.
It's $400, so it's not.
Yeah, I'd be fine waiving it.
It's not going to break us.
No.
And they did a lot of work to put that thing up without costing a lot of money, so.
It's just like the Fun Day Committee. We give money to them for a nice thing. And this is all volunteer that's building that.
Make a motion to waive the water sewer connection fee for the Unity Wrestling Facility.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Bevo?
Yes.
Morris?
Yes.
Perry?
Yes.
King?
Yes.
Stuber?
Yes.
All right, nothing for the police department. Treasurer, do we have any questions about the bills that are on there? Do you have anything you want to add? I did sign an agreement. We're starting to kind of work on audit stuff. So we're going to have Leslie Lundy, if you guys remember. She's the one that double checks the audit because we don't have anybody in our village right now that can double check it. So we're going to have to contract with her again. Cost us maybe $200-ish. So we signed a contract with her again. So no bills, no questions on the bills.
Okay, cool.
Motion
to pay bills as presented.
A second.
Popo?
Yes.
Morris?
Yes.
Perry?
Yes.
King?
Yes.
Stuber?
Yes.
All right, do we have any sewer credits?
Two or three Campbell?
That's the one we voted on last time. You guys voted no on it. We put it back on there. She put the contractor stuff on there. You added. What else did you add to it?
I added some notes. What it was is we bought the house in September. It was built last summer for him. The contractor had hooked things up wrong. So the cord on one of the pumps was somehow around the ball or whatever for the other pump, and the pump was, his jet pump was running, his water powered pump, and he didn't know it. And when we contacted him that his water bill was high and we have a leak alert for him, then he was trying to figure it out and called in the contractor because he's still under warranty because it's not been a year yet. And that's when they found out that that's what it was.
I would go back on the contractor then to pay the fees myself.
But it didn't go down the sewer system either.
He's sump connected to the sewer system.
Which would be part of the infiltration thing that we're having right now.
Maybe that's not. That should be a storm.
Didn't say that should be a storm. Should be. So that's why it was added back on there. If you guys want.
If it wasn't treated by the sewer system,
we give everybody else a credit. You are
for
correct.
The sewer portion,
it's
he can still go after. They can still go after contract for the water.
What was it for? What was it?
126.44.
120. So going back on the contractor for less than $200, it'd be more of a hassle for them, probably.
But this is a sewer credit. This,
yeah.
I mean, he can go back on the contract.
For the water, oh, most definitely.
That's.
And the water's more expensive than the sewer. So that's why it's back on there. So if you wish to give them the sewer credit, I just need a motion or table it. Mm-hmm. And it stays the same.
If you can make this motion, ask him. I'll make the motion again to grant the sewer credit 203 Campbell for 126.44.
Okay, any second?
I'll second it.
All right, roll call.
Buffo?
Yes.
Morris?
Yes.
Perry?
No.
Ping?
Yes.
Stuber?
Abstain.
Okay. All right, so that's taken care of. Sewer's taken care of.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from May 15th.
We have an extension.
Oh, no. Oh, we do, sorry.
We have an extension. Oh, on the sewer stuff.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
And you worked this out, right, Randy?
Keeping me in line.
Okay. I'll make a motion to grant the extension to Richard Paring. As presented.
I'll second.
And Mark, is there a way we could just give Randy or the mayor authority to do extensions?
I thought we did. I don't remember that for sure. I don't see it hurting to vote on this one, and then you can relook to see if you got the authority.
According to what Robert told me, it was you guys gave authority for one every 12 months, and
yes.
Anything more than that had to come to the board, and this is more than.
Oh,
that.
Okay.
There's your answer.
There.
That's correct.
Okay.
For the same individual? Is that one every 12 months? Gotcha.
Alright, so we have who made the motion?
Jerry.
Who made the second?
Vicky.
Okay, roll call.
Buffo?
Yes.
Morris?
Yes.
Perry?
Yes.
Ping?
Yes.
Stuber?
Yes.
Anything else I'm missing out there? Okay, good. Alright, Vicky.
I'll make a motion to approve the meeting minutes from May 15th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Perfect.
There are issues on the June 5th one.
Let's get them fixed.
President Murphy. Not President Morris.
Ouch. Ouch.
Yes, I moved up. Quick.
Congrats.
Yeah.
And Trustee Morris was at the meeting, but does not appear in the list.
I was moved up.
But later,
I was moved out.
Later in the votes, Trustee Morris is in there.
So she got demoted.
Man, I got really messed up that day.
There was a recall that day.
I got recalled and rebated and everything.
I'll make a motion to approve the executive session minutes for June 5th with the corrections.
The regular session is what we're on now.
Regular session
with the corrections.
Well, it's the same thing on the...
It's the same thing on the...
No, regular session was May 15th.
You guys just need to keep up with me.
Right. I'll second whatever Ryan said.
Well, we can go ahead and vote on that.
Let's go ahead and vote on the executive session minutes. All in favor of approving the executive session minutes?
Aye.
Anybody against? Perfect. Now, let's go back to the June 5th regular session minutes. Terrence?
President Morris needs to be President Murphy. Trustee Morris needs to be added to the present were statement at the beginning of the minutes. And that's about it. It appears that on page 2...
The first three lines, there's President Morris.
It's just to set her up for the motion later.
But it appears on page 2, the time that President Murphy is there, it is
so do
as
doctor
Murphy.
Wages per mistake, or
right.
Is that how this goes?
Doc him per word.
Yeah. Well, I apologize that those slipped cracks.
All right, so you're making the motion.
Motion to approve the June 5th, 2018 regular meeting minutes.
And
with the corrections.
A second.
Thank you.
So second.
Short.
That's okay. You can arm wrestle. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody against? All right, moving on. Oh.
Do we have to roll call the executive session minutes?
I don't think so.
No. Okay.
Okay. Appointment. I forgot to do this last time. Appointing Randy Bacher to the planning board. I thought I'd already done that, but apparently I completely overlooked it. So I need to make a motion to put Randy Bacher on the planning board.
Make the motion.
Okay,
does he know this is?
Yeah, actually, he participated in the planning board meeting.
Didn't he used to be on it?
Yes. So.
Okay.
Vicky, a second. And is that's not roll call, is it?
Yes.
Is it roll call?
No.
All in favor?
And the motion is to approve the president's appointment of Randy to the board.
That's what Ryan said. So. And so all in favor?
President Morris.
I think President Morris needs to take over.
Anybody against? Okay.
You had the right idea, Barbara.
All right, so that's taken care
that's
of.
That's pretty bad. I appreciate that. It just means you can't read your own handwriting sometimes.
No, no, I was typing it. And that's why it repeated itself later because I'm cutting and pasting.
Oh, yeah. It's
but you got to remember, too, when I'm doing the minutes, right. You guys are pelting me with questions.
Right.
And
we'll have to go and do we have to
have done a better job? I should have read it.
On number C on old business, we forgot to do this. Do you want to do the same thing we did for Matt on this one, or do we need to go to executive session and discuss this? We completely overlooked them at the meeting. So we can do the exact same thing we did for Matt.
Which is the same thing.
And then he had
a certain percentage.
He had 2.5 overall for each employee, and he can adjust it however he sees fit for performance.
I think with your assistance.
Okay.
I thought we discussed it.
So we didn't vote on the police officers.
Yeah.
So I just need a motion. Where were that?
To authorize the chief of police to make. Well, no, is the 2.5% or just? I know it's just for the
part timers. Or do you
want to
do 2.5% across the board?
2.5% over what he paid the part timers last year? Or
it's 2.5% added onto their salary. You just want to do 2.5% for each part timer then? Because there's only two.
Right, but one just was hired. How long has he been here?
He just went out on his own, so not very long.
So we can't give him a raise.
Okay. Well, do we need to go to executive session and discuss it, or do we want
part timers are not covered by the collective bargaining agreement?
They are not.
It's your call if you want to do it. I would say that part timers are far and few between and hard to find,
mm-hmm.
and that the 2.5% probably won't have a big impact. The question is, do we want to go to an executive session or not to talk about adjusting the part-timers, or do you want to give them a 2.5% raise, and you've got one part-timer you just joined.
And we only have two part-timers, right? I think. We only have two part-timers right now. We are hiring another one. Which would be a good, maybe, good possibility for a full-timer.
We'd be in favor of talking about it in the executive session.
You want to go to executive session?
That's what we would be in favor of.
Okay. All right, we'll skip that. We'll go on.
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion on the burn ordinance at all? Does anybody have anything to add to that?
I think what we need to do is we need to make sure that the language is back in there about recreational fires.
Okay.
because it was taken out when we did the early early banning of leaf burning, because that November 2016 ordinance came at the request of some of our citizens. It was just going to go into effect in January 2017 without an additional ordinance. So I think in the haste of doing that, we might have, we just overlooked some things, and we're just trying to work on the leaf burning, and then we only went to just fires that are your cooking. So I think we just need to make sure that the recreational fires gets put back in there. And I think we also need to have some language about no burn barrels and no noxious smoke. Because I heard about 2 weeks ago there were people that were burning in town, and some folks called our police department, and they said, well, I gave them a warning and let me know if they do it again. But it's been banned since 2016 and should have received a ticket at that time for what they were doing. It wasn't a recreational fire. They weren't smoking foods. They were burning.
Well, we've got an outright prohibition against burning any rubbish or garbage.
Right.
But, I mean, it's easy to go ahead and put in no burn barrels just so that you can point to somebody that say there's no burn barrels, but you can still hold them accountable
right.
for having a burn barrel under the ordinance. But it's your call.
And that's fine.
No, but if you want to add that in there, sometimes it's helpful for just stating stuff that you don't need to, just so you can point it out to someone who's stubborn about reading ordinances.
Now's the time to do it, because he's going to be making changes anyways.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Double dip there.
And then the kindling thing for starting a fire. That was kind of odd. Fixing the kindling stuff. Any other discussion on that? All right, I don't have anything for new business. Does anybody else have anything for new business? We're still working on the nuisance and ticklers. How are we doing on the nuisances?
I haven't gotten anything from the police department, so I have no idea.
Okay, special event permits. Do we have any of those?
Nope.
Okay, anything else for the good of the order until we go to the executive session? No? Okay. Any motion to go to executive session? What?
Motion.
Before we do that,
yes, sir.
I did want to bring up one thing, and that was, and it may or may not affect what you think, but all of the part-time police officers are paid a flat wage, and they're currently not adjusted
based
longevity
on
or performance or anything.
The only adjustment would be a promotion.
You're kind of competing in a marketplace of other small towns looking for the same police.
We can go to executive session for a minute, because I can put 2 cents in on another issue too. So,
all right. Well, so then the issues are going to be for. One of those executive session minutes and this stuff got substantial.
It'll be
compensation,
discussing hiring, performance, compensation, and employment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Essentially.
All right, and so that'll be pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C1 and 5. So.
Yes.
You don't
need the last one.
I'll second.
I can't make a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, you'll make it.
So the motion that you can say that you like would be to be a motion to enter an executive session for the limited purpose of discussing the hiring, performance, compensation, and or employment of one or more village employees pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2(c)(1) and (5).
I make that motion as stated.
Second.
I thought you learned so much about laws and statutes and wastewater, did you?
All right. We need roll call, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Buffo.
Yes.
Morris.
Yes.
Perry.
Yes.
King.
Yes.
Stuber.
Yes.
All right. Cool.